It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hello, this is Greg Gutfeld. This is The One, and guess what? I am not all by myself. Because I'm with Eric Carmen, who wrote that hit song All By Myself. And that's just part, a small part of his amazing career. He's had numerous hit songs. He was in a great band called The Raspberries. Then he had his big solo career, which is when he wrote All By Myself and Hungry Eyes, which, of course, you remember from Dirty Dancing. I'm going to shut up now and say hello to Eric Carmen. How are you?
I'm great, Greg. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Now that I have to start out by telling you that my wife and I are huge fans. We never miss your show, ever. We watch you on The Five every day. And I agree with you on pretty much everything politically.
That means you're as crazy as I am. Were you always like that? Or was this an age thing?
I've been... around the political spectrum, I usually voted based on candidates before, but when Mr. Trump became president, everything changed, especially because, he's been so maligned and attacked by everybody from all sides for his entire presidency, and I think he's doing a spectacular job, and the whole Trump derangement syndrome is just so crazy. At a certain point, I decided to heck with my career. I may never work again, but I'm coming out.
There are two things I have to say to that. Number one, I've noticed that on your Twitter, you are basically, I don't give an F anymore. So you're like, you may be all by yourself at a certain point.
I may be within the entertainment industry.
Yes, exactly. So but the thing is, one of the things I notice about, like whether it's people like you or James Woods, you have to reach, or even Clint Eastwood, you have to reach a certain level of, I guess you would call it FU money. So you know that if your industry is going to spit you out, that your industry will spit you out. But you have, All By Myself probably has bought you 16 homes, I'm assuming.
Well, I don't know if it has bought me 16 homes, but it's done quite well.
Yes.
And I have one nice home, and and that's plenty. It's been a great copyright. It's been recorded, by Frank Sinatra, Sheryl Crow, Celine Dion, Tom Jones, Shirley Bassey, Henry Mancini, who was the first person I ever asked for an autograph when I was 12.
That's crazy. That's got to kind of blow your mind, because I know your bio pretty well. I had older sisters, but the thing that you idolize Henry Mancini, he records your song, and you love the Beatles, and then you end up in a band with Ringo Starr.
Yeah, the real pinch me story from that tour. Aside from just the how fun it was to be asked to be in his band, every night I'm sitting on stage at the keyboard. I look to my left, and there's Jack Bruce, the bass player, lead singer of Cream, Ringo back on the drums, Dave Edmunds on guitar, and Simon Kirk from Free and Bad Company on drums. Not a bad little band to be in.
Yes.
And beyond that, when we played New York, when the group played in the New York area, we taped the Letterman show that day, and I completely forgot until I rounded the corner and looked at the marquee that Letterman taped at the Ed Sullivan Theater. So I realized, as we're walking in the door, I'm going to be sitting on a stage in the same spot, on the same stage where I saw the Beatles play for the first time when I was 14 years old or 13 years old, and said, that's what I want to do. And I'm looking over my shoulder, and I'm playing with a Beatle on that stage. So that was a kind of wow moment.
Do you know what's funny, though? I am more impressed that you played with Dave Edmonds, who I love. Remember I Hear You Knockin'? What a great song that was.
We played I Hear You Knockin', and it was great fun because I got to play bass on it within the tour because I'm not a boogie-woogie piano player.
Yeah.
And that's what Dave needed for that song.
Mm-hmm.
But Jack Bruce was. So Jack and I switched instruments, and I played bass on Dave's songs.
Wow.
So that was really great fun.
All right, so you strike me, like when I was growing up, I just assumed you were British, which you aren't, obviously. But you strike me as an incredibly normal person. Are you like, and I know a lot of musicians, the ones that don't talk a lot are the ones that are normal, and the ones that you see most often are crazy. Are you an oddball in the musical world because you seem so normal?
I guess I am sort of. I knew a lot of people early on.
Yeah.
Who took a lot of drugs, you know,
mm-hmm.
played in bands with guys who did lots of drugs and whatever else. And I remember a story that one guy who I played in a band with told me, and he had dropped acid a bunch of times, and I said, well, what was it like? And because I was like literally the best kid in the world. I didn't smoke. I didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
I was very busy listening to how all of my favorite songwriters wrote songs, and I was studying their work because there's not really a school for that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was listening to, figuring out West Side Story and everything Henry Mancini ever wrote and the Gershwins and studying lyrics and whatever. And this guy said to me, the first time I took acid, you know, it was kind of fun and whatever. But when I woke up the next day, I realized that I was somehow different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept taking it to try to get back to who I was.
Oh,
and you don't ever get there. That was all I ever needed to hear, and I guess it scared the daylights out of me because I thought, well, how terrible and unrewarding it would be to become successful doing what you love and what you want to do, and in the process end up a whole different person
mm-hmm.
who wanted that from the guy who wanted that success. So I as best I could, I kind of tried to avoid ending up a different person.
Right.
And part of that was I grew up in the suburbs about 30 miles east of Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
My parents and family and whatever friends were there. And occasionally, starting sometime in the late 70s, people started telling me, oh, you got to move out to L.A. And I did most of them, all my early recording, all the stuff with the Raspberries and my first solo album, I've recorded in New York. And I love New York. I get along famously with people from New York.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody kept telling me, California, you got to move out here. You got to come to L.A. So I did. And I lasted for about a year. And I saw a comedian on the Tonight Show one night who his opening line was, he said, I'm from New York. And everybody applauded. And he said, I've been out here in L.A. now for about a year, and I've got friends I haven't even used yet. And I thought, that's my experience, you know. And after about a year, I packed up all my stuff and got a moving van and moved back to Ohio. And a couple of years later, they convinced me to move out again, and I did, and I stayed for a year and moved back. And I did it four times, and after the fourth time, I got to experience the joy of the Northridge earthquake.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of got your attention, because, you know, most of the earthquakes, your picture on the wall tilts a little bit. But the Northridge earthquake was like, this is serious. And I started to reassess, why am I here exactly? And this place doesn't make me happy. And that was it. And I had the...
Uh,
I, 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 I have not chosen to live in the meccas of the entertainment industry.
You can live wherever you want, though. I mean, it's like you've sold so many records. I remember, so I have three older sisters, and I remember the Raspberries well because, you know, when you're a kid, it's odors and smells that bring back to your childhood. And I remember the scratch and sniff cover that you did. Was it a single or an album of the Raspberries?
No, that was the album. It was our first album.
Yeah.
We knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
It came as a complete, we never got to see our albums before they came out. We never got to choose the pictures, obviously, if you look at them. So the way I actually heard about that is the bass player of the band called me one night, and he said that a girl that he knew had just called and said that she had just purchased our album.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's not possible. It's not out yet, because we didn't know it was out.
Yeah.
And because record companies, they don't care about you. You're just the artist. Why would you need to know if it's out? And she gave him some crazy story about it. She said, well, I actually didn't get the album. I got the 8-track because the album is delayed because when you squeeze it, Raspberry Jam's going to fall out of it or something. And he called me up in horror, and I was equally horrified, and we called the record label the next day, and we found out, no, it's not that. And then it turned out to be that scratch and sniff sticker, which was kind of it was unique, I guess, and novel. I'm not sure that it was the greatest idea, because the whole idea of Raspberries was not the small fuzzy fruit.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Bronx Cheer.
I didn't know
we were basically formed because the drummer and I, who put the band together, hated prog rock.
That's true.
We loved the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and the Small Faces and the Birds and the Beach Boys and all the great records that Jerry Goffin and Carole King wrote,
mm-hmm.
and Phil Spector and all that stuff. And then when we hit the 70s, suddenly, you know, FM radio came in, and it was really slow talking.
Yeah.
Stoner DJs playing 10-minute Jethro Tull tracks, and I was like, "What is this? And where's Pete Townsend slashing away at that Rickenbacker?" So we were completely put off by progressive rock. We wanted nothing to do with it, and my whole deal was the '60s was all about 3.5-minute songs,
mm-hmm.
great songs, and you had to be able to write and deliver a great song in 3.5 minutes. And so I had no interest whatsoever in listening to a, you know, extended 5-minute flute solo or any other kind of jam. And there were bands that were suddenly filling up the airwaves, like Hot Tuna,
right?
And you know, they had a guy named Papa John Creech, and there would you'd be playing these electric violin solos that were 8 minutes long, and I thought, God, I hate this stuff. So Raspberries was our default name because we couldn't think of anything better.
Mm-hmm.
We used to come in, you know, everybody, we were trying to think up names, and we had a gig planned, and we were getting down to the deadline, and every day we'd come in and somebody would throw out a name, you know, how about the Iron Lime? And people would throw stuff at them, and it was like, no, that's not going to work. And we were really down to the wire, and I had watched Little Rascals episode where there's a guy named Froggy,
mm-hmm.
and throughout the episode he says, raspberries, everything. And I just, while I was getting cleaned up to go to rehearsal, I happened to have that on, and we got to rehearsal, and I threw out some name that everybody hated, and when they threw stuff at me, I said, raspberries, and we went,
that's it.
That's it. And that was it. But the whole idea of it being Little Fuzzy Fruit was really a misnomer. It was, our logo should have been, you know, like vibrating lips and a tongue.
Yeah,
you know?
But then Mick Jagger would sue.
I think it might have been before that,
yeah.
Before their logo, but who knows?
Yeah, that's a hilarious story. I had no idea. I remember, though, I remember scratching the sticker and that it worked for me because that is a memory that sticks to me. Hey, I have now. I want to ask you some selfish questions. I started playing my guitar again. I bought a Strat like 20 some odd years ago, and then I got a really important job, and never touched it again. Then I got some time now. I'm learning how to play guitar. You taught yourself how to play guitar. Are there any tips that you would give somebody, or mistakes that I should avoid when you're trying to learn to play an instrument like the guitar?
Here's my biggest tip. If you want to learn to play any instrument, learn to play piano first.
Oh, God, that's too late. Because piano's hard,
the
right?
The reason that I could teach myself how to play guitar was because I had studied classical piano for years and years and years and years.
Right.
So I had a certain understanding of music and theory and all that sort of stuff before I started on guitar. And I ended up actually going to a music store. I actually wanted to be a drummer first, and I bought a drum pad and those great big sticks, and I came home and started playing in my parents' apartment, and they said the drum pad was too loud. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that kind of is going to nix any chance I ever have of getting a set of drums in here.
Yeah.
So I better pick another instrument. And so I said, well, okay, how about guitar? So I went and there's a local music shop, and I took one lesson, and the guy started trying to teach me how to play Red River Valley on the E string. Mm. And I said, that's not what I want to do. I just want to play rhythm guitar like John Lennon.
Yeah.
And he said, no. You have to start here, and you have to learn these strings one at a time. And I was much too impatient for that. So on the way out, I bought a Beatle chord book, and I went home, and I just started learning the formations and learned to play. And within about 6 months, I had taught myself to play guitar, and I knew probably five or six chords. And that was three more than the guys who had a band who first invited me to come sit in with them knew. So I instantly became, wow, he knows six chords. And I became the leader of the band, and I was off and running at 15 and a half.
So let me ask you, because you when you write a song, do you see it as a whole, or do you see it more as a product made of parts that you kind of add and subtract?
You know, most of my career, I heard as I was writing, I hear finished records in my head.
Right.
I mean, I hear all the parts. I hear all the guitar parts and the drum parts and harmony parts and whatever.
Wow. Yeah.
Just finished records. And so it was always a matter of me being able to try to be able to convey what I heard to the guys in the band and the producer and whatever. And sometimes that works out well, and sometimes that is harder to do, depending upon who you're working with. And eventually, as I, you know, later in my career, I started working with, I did some collaborating with a gentleman named Dean Pitchford, who wrote the screenplay for Footloose and all the lyrics. And Dean and I wrote Almost Paradise together, and and then that worked out so well that we said, I said, no, we should do something else. So we wrote a couple other songs, and one of them was Make Me Lose Control. But those were the first times that I actually didn't know, you know, sitting down to, you know, the whole record, what the whole record was going to sound like. I was just kind of like, well, let's just write a great song. But most of the time I hear everything. I hear the whole thing.
Stay right there. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
You said you got to learn piano. I think I took one or two piano lessons, and I think the piano is made to, like, as a survival of the fittest. Like, if you can't handle the lessons, get away from the instrument, and that was me. Now, I want to ask you, but I'm good. I'm actually learning. I'm learning the chords. I'm learning how to play guitars, play songs. Generally, I stick around the Ramones and the Clash kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
Because
That's okay. Yeah, those are good.
Yeah.
Good
to start. Yeah, and also the Cramps, which is one of my favorite bands, a rockabilly band from Ohio, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes. You're so polite. By the way, I'm running out of time, but I want to ask you, who's the weirdest person you ever met in music?
The weirdest person I ever met.
Yeah.
Boy, there's quite a selection to choose from there. I once met Lowell George.
Oh, Little Feet.
The artist of Little Feet.
Yeah, Little Feet.
And I was coming into a session in the studio where they were finishing up a session. And I'm kind of a fan first. You know, I come at being a musician from the standpoint of being a huge fan of all the bands that I loved.
Right.
The coolest guy I ever met was John Lennon.
Yeah.
I will tell you that. And one of my proudest photos that I have is John proudly displaying his raspberry sweatshirt that was taken by his girlfriend May Pang, which is hanging in my office.
Wow.
On the wall. In 1974. He also, when I actually met him, he said he had heard Overnight Sensation by the Raspberries, and I was trying to figure out what I would say when I actually shook his hand, and I couldn't think of anything smart to say. And before I had a chance to say a word, he stuck his hand out and he started shaking my hand, and he said, "Love your record. Ringo and I are going to do promotion for you."
Oh, fantastic.
It was so, I said something like, "I like yours too." You know, something that stupid.
Can I tell you that we have a connection? I got drunk with his son about 2 months ago, Sean, in downtown Manhattan at a steakhouse. We met and had drinks. But nobody should know that because I don't want to get him in trouble.
I've not had the great fortune to meet Sean.
Yeah, great guy. I met him on Twitter, just the way I met you. Was Twitter.
That's awesome. It works sometimes.
It does work.
So the weirdest thing was I met Lowell George, and I said to him, as he's, you know, packing up his gear and whatever, I said, "Who's your favorite guitar player?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he looked at me with a deadpan face, and he said, "Keith Richard."
Mm.
And I said, and then he broke out laughing. Because he thought Keith was the worst guitar player ever. And that, to me, is complete sacrilege because I love Keith Richard more than almost any guitar player alive, and he's written more great guitar intros than anybody. I can think of.
No, the riff, he's a riff
so
genius.
I actually seriously thought about maybe taking a swack at Lowell George. I thought it was incredibly rude, and he was completely, you know, out of bounds. You know, don't you be calling Keith any bad names in front of me.
Keith Richards, it's a lot to do with the tuning of his guitar. I mean, he's an amazing guitarist, but he has doesn't he tune in E as a D pretty much?
He uses open G tuning.
Okay,
man, his whole guitar intro thing, which wasn't bad to begin with. I mean, Satisfaction was before that,
right?
But when he found open G tuning, that was everything. It was, you know, Jumpin' Jack Flash and Honky Tonk Women and all the incredible stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Eric, I could talk to you for another hour, but you know what? I have to go get my makeup for the five because I have to be beautiful.
Well, you go do that, and I'll go watch you.
Yeah, you have to, because I know you watch the show, which is awesome.
We do.
Which is really awesome. And I am going to be, I think my monologue today is going to be on Bloomberg dropping out and Liz Warren. It's going to be a fun show. This is, hasn't it been a fun time, this with the coronavirus exception? It's been an interesting time to be alive, that's for sure.
It's interesting. It is.
Yes.
Aggravating, yeah. Maddening sometimes. I saw James Woods' first tweet today, and it was he and I are thinking right along the same lines.
Yeah.
That Hillary's going to be vice president, and they're going to push to get Joe in, and then Joe is going to
drop
out. Say, I got these health issues.
This scares me because you're the third person. You know, I have a good friend of mine, Walter Kern, who's a great writer, has been saying this for almost a year, that this is how it's going
to
be.
Yeah, I've been thinking it, too. I've been trying to figure out how they were going to do it, and I never thought it would be a backdoor for Biden. But,
you're speechless.
What I was going to say.
Yes.
I can't say what I was going to say because I know better than to do that.
Right. Well, Eric, it's been a pleasure. And
great talking to you, Greg.
Yeah.
I feel like you're my bud, because I watch you so often and you keep me in stitches. Mm-hmm. So, and I agree with you on everything politically. I mean, your little monologues on your show, usually I'm like, yes. Absolutely.
that makes my day, because it's like if my 14-year-old self knew that this day would be, my 14-year-old self would be extremely excited because of the raspberries, you know?
Well, those guys rock.
Yes, exactly.
That's fun.
Eric Carmen will like me in roughly 40 years. I just have to wait till then.
Weirder things happen. Things like that happen with me too. So people that I, admire somehow through Twitter or Facebook, we become friends. And how about that?
Exactly. It's very strange. It's the best thing about social media because there's so many bad things.
Yeah.
All right, Eric. Great talking to you.
All right, Greg. Great talking to you, too. Have a great show.
You, too. Or me, too. Take care.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.